Welcome to Saha Says, where we go over the headlines of the week, sharing our in-the-weeds opinions. Joining us tonight on the program, of course, is Vesh, a security engineer and the Saha moderator, Pinky, the team captain for UTSA's CCDC team, Cooper, a biohacker and our news curator, and myself, I'm Sciatic Nerd, B-Sides SATX coordinator and podcast manager. We're going to jump in first thanking our sponsor, Axion VPN, who delivers a quality solution for your private connection needs. Of course, for more information about their offerings, check out axionvpn.com. If you or your organization is interested in sponsoring the efforts of Saha or Saha Says, please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at SATXHackers. Launching into the news for this week, we're going to talk about GPG, which patches an 18-year-old libgcrypt random number generator issue. So new versions of libgcrypt and GNU Privacy Guard, or GNU-PG, or GPG, take your pick. The ThreatPost article goes on to explain that this Wednesday, they released an update that included fixes for vulnerabilities discovered in the mixing functions of the libgcrypt random number generator. So after going through all of the stuff, the point being that if you can trick the random number generator, you can actually trivially predict the next 160 bits of output, which goes back all the way, which was written back in 1997. And since this is a free implementation of OpenPGP, it's used by applications to encrypt and digitally sign data and is used for private communications over email. The thing that's kind of interesting about this is that it was an 18-year-old bug that they've actually now been able to correct and patch and release, giving all of the people who use this tool another excuse not to still use it. And by that I mean, because even though there are great tools out there that are exist in the world today that actually help folks enhance their personal privacy, there's nothing you can do to make folks actually use those tools. And the sad truth is that even though this makes GPG or OpenPGP more usable in the long run, people, unless it's super easy, just aren't going to adopt it. So as much as I love the fact that they just fixed this bug this far into the game, I still find myself wondering, who cares? Guys, Pinky, do you use GPG?
I know I should, but I don't. I have only maybe 2 people I know who actually use it, maybe 3. And, you know, the fact that when you hang around a lot of security people and you can only think of maybe 3 people off the top of your head is kind of depressing.
Yeah, I kind of figured it's something along those lines. Coop, you know, you're learning in this, right? You're growing in this field, so you must use GPG every day, right?
Unfortunately, I only know of one other person that really actually cares about it, and he, you know, doesn't even hardly ever use it. So it seems kind of sad to me, but I know of so many more people that use, like, the Signal app for texting.
Sure.
Than use PGP for their email, what have you. It's silly.
Well, that means that Vesh, man, you've got to be using this every single day, right? I mean, you just hands down have to be the one on this cast who is using GPG in a meaningful way in your day-to-day operations.
Nope, I have a smart card. And the other thing is that I looked up and I Googled for a GPG flaw because I couldn't recall which one it was. Mm-hmm. There have been several.
Yeah, sure.
And they've gone for years without being discovered. So I think this is not, this is like just the fail squad of email and communication encryption. The bugs in these things go for years without being noticed and everything else. I'm like, just, all right, look, that's it. Just, can we please be done with this? Can we please say fuck PGP, fuck GPG, screw it all, go get a smart card, use Signal, do something else. Just do something else. Don't use this crap. It's garbage.
Okay, hold on. So you're telling me that it's better for me to go and find some fancy schmancy app that I'm going to go just load up and plug into, and that's going to be safer than using GPG?
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when, you know, one thing has millions of users and the other one has two.
And that was actually my point. That's why I'm taking this attitude. That's why I'm bringing it this way, is because I strongly believe in the benefit of individual privacy by email communication. And if you're going to use a PKI certificate, awesome. If you're going to use a GPG key, great. But make it usable. The failure of any crypto system or any security measure, forget crypto system, any security measure, if it's not usable, it's going to be like that scene out of Arrested Development. There are dozens of us, dozens. And what good does that... Great, it's terrific. We have a public key server. And every time we try to reboot this thing, the sad truth was we at B-Sides SATX this year stood up with the help of Coop, with the help of the guys and gals from Austin, we're working to stand up Crypto Party 512. Not 210, where the conference took place. Austin. Hey, Coop, how many people showed up for the key signing party?
Yeah, about that. Yeah. And yeah, I'm totally going into tech on this. Because I sat there most of the day. You know what I did most of the day?
What'd you do?
Taught lock picking. Because I had four people throughout the entire day that showed up to sign their keys. That's it. Four people only. And it was kind of ridiculous. So I went ahead and saw a couple talks. You know, I used to think, you know, no talks ever, especially if you're there to do something. But I figured, what the heck? I've seen four faces. This is ridiculous. I've taught more people lockpicking. Hey, let's go support friends that are doing talks. And then there was something about free beer at some point. You know, that, of course, you know, just like Shiny or Squirrel, you say free beer, and we're like, hey, what? Signing keys? I don't know anything about keys. Fuck the keys.
Exactly.
I like beer.
I can't remember if it was beer or if I was just using the company card.
That was actually in the, you had to be over near the talks directly, is where that
like, the adult track, not the kids side track.
Right.
I was over in another building where they had the keg.
So
yeah, that way you don't have kids trying to do keg stands.
Well, you know,
they got beer Chuck E. Cheese, don't they?
I don't know.
I haven't been into Chuck E. Cheese in beer, over 30 years, so I don't remember.
They have beer Chuck E. Cheese, trust me.
Apparently, okay.
I think animatronic. I like Chuck E. Cheese now.
There we go. Animatronic characters love beer. You heard it here. So. obviously the entire point behind this slightly trollish reference to a story, I am thrilled that they actually helped fix the random number generator for this suite of tools. But until we can make it more digestible for everybody else, it's like eating kale. There are going to be those 20 people you know who tell you how awesome kale is, and you couldn't give two rats' rear ends about the damn thing. So let's...
I guarantee you there are more organic kale farmers in Portland, Oregon than there are people who use BGB.
And when you say Portland, Oregon, that makes me even say that much more. Who the fuck cares?
So, hey, if you're listening to this podcast and you have influence, can you please take steps or help someone else to take steps to make this integrated into something that we can actually care about? Because I love security. I want to help folks communicate more securely. Let's do it so that they'd actually pick up the device and try it. Because
you mean like the Outlook PGP or the Outlook PGP plugin or whatever it is that's not ASLR, not DAP, not Safe SEH, not. I mean, I'm just saying that you know there might be larger problems here than just the fact that it's impossible to use.
It's true. Well,
didn't Apple, you know, hire like one of the co-founders of PGP? So shouldn't we expect to see at least a little bit more encryption, you know, fixed and incorporated into their platform?
See, now that
including email and texting and all that.
I'd be very excited to see how they actually do that over the next 2 to 3 years, because I'm guessing the first step is going to be data arrest protection. That's what I got to imagine that they got this person on board for. Help us make sure that the drive is more secure. Help us fix the bugs in our cloud storage software. And then maybe on your off time, in your copious free time, worry about getting our mail client to securely send and sign things.
Or, hey, we're going to hire this big name in the free and open source crypto community so that all of you guys get off of our, all of you guys get off of our backs about crypto. I mean, you know, that guy could do diddly dick with the actual cryptography on the system. He might just be there to be a figurehead so that people go, oh, look at Apple. They're doing their crypto. Oh, aren't they so much better than the government? Let's ignore everything else.
That's a possibility. That's a strong possibility. I mean,
you hire good engineers and good mathematicians to engineer your crypto. You don't go out and say, oh, let me go hire a figurehead and then let him work on my crypto. I mean, that doesn't make much sense. You already got engineers and shit for this. Why, you know, why they did it for the name. They did it for the name. That's all. And that's just to keep people off their backs.
Well, and that's why things, as Cooper was mentioning here in the chat room along with Pinky, the amazing thing about a service like ProtonMail. So you can actually leverage ProtonMail, but it's, again, not necessarily straightforward. And now you're extending your trust further away, and so you have to be willing to trust an organization you don't know, even if their servers are 1,000 meters beneath solid rock, is what Pinky copied and pasted from their explanation. Open source, but under rock. I think that could be a tagline or a t-shirt or something. But anyway, I digress, because we were probably going to need to talk about how a judge tosses out a suit. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. So the Twitter helping out terrorists is gone. It turns out that if you make a messaging platform and somebody uses it to commit a crime, you're not responsible for that idiot. So... how this ever made it past? I'm more worried that it made it past in a panel first. I mean, who would have let this go to trial? Who let this go to trial? This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
No, it's not.
Twitter.
No. You've been to conferences, live events. It's not the dumbest you've ever heard.
Yeah, I've heard Chris Roberts talk before. It's not the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Oh,
so,
sure, sir.
So, that guy, though, was at B-Sides SATX, like Fire Talks, like 2 or 3 years ago, that was blah, 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 diversity in tech, blah, 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 whatever. And it turns out he's a friggin' lawyer. He's not even in tech. So. That's what I want to hear. The plight of the straight white male lawyer and diversity in tech. So, no, it's, this is, okay, this is not the dumbest thing I've ever done. Dumbest.
I'm sorry, I feel accomplished for the day. I actually got him to admit it is not the dumbest thing he's read or heard. I feel somehow accomplished in my life today. I'm kidding.
Are we done now? Are we done? We made him admit that.
No,
I guess we're done for the day. Everybody have a great weekend. Coffee. Bye.
Yeah, coffee talk. Everybody talk amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. Uh-huh. Twitter is neither complicit nor involved with terrorists. Talk amongst yourself.
Okay. No, seriously. So tell us, actually, talk to us about the article. Come on.
Well, that's it. The judge, I believe the judge kicked away a very dumb argument that Twitter is material aiding and abetting terrorists in its messaging platform.
But how could Twitter has nothing to do? Yeah, that's like saying if I write a post-it note and stick it where everyone else can see it, now the place where you stuck the post-it note is suddenly responsible. Come on.
Yeah, it's like Bonnaroo. You know, the person responsible for all those flyers of douchebags with guitars. It's like now you know what, you're responsible for every douchebag with a guitar.
So,
yeah, Yamaha, we're suing you.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be Buskaroo, wouldn't it? Because
and Ovation, you're burning now.
Oh no.
Yeah. No. Suzuki Samurai is responsible for every D-bag Hawaiian.
No.
Without Suzuki Samurais or Isuzu Amigos or whatever the hell they were, there would be no more surfer douchebags in Hawaii.
They'd be driving something else. My point. So the only thing I ever really knew about, as much as I thought those little, like very super light Jeep devices, the cars were kind of cool looking when you saw them at the auto show. They looked like they could somehow be fun. All they did was they get reported as, you know, oh, another one flipped on the highway. Someone drove it over 55, tried to change lanes too fast, and the whole thing just came undone.
What are you talking about? Firestone tires? What?
No.
Are we
before.
Talking about Kias?
Geotrackers? No, that's just, what?
That was just the car going, I hate this person driving me, and then flipping over and just saying, you know what, the world's better off without you.
You're saying this is an early form of seat ejection gone wrong. So instead of actually just pushing the seat out.
Right.
Oh, going right. No, oh.
Gone right. I don't want these people surviving.
Oh, you're afraid they're going to breed, aren't you?
Oh, gosh.
Well, that's the thing is that most D-bags driving Samurais and Isuzus have been breeding since they were like 16, so there's going to be morons out there.
Saha says does not officially endorse the flipping or destruction of vehicles, personal property, or life. Okay?
Yeah, but Vesh really does. I think this world would be a better place if more Jeep Wranglers fell off a cliff.
So, second story of the day, people, is OPSEC.
That's right. It's all about OPSEC, so Vesh can't find you.
For everyone's benefits.
It's a different kind of OPSEC. Hide from Vesh and you might live longer. No, wait.
I drive a minivan.
So you're basically saying that all of those vehicles are targets to you.
Does it say free pen test on the side?
Free pen test.
It says candy.
Mm. Oh.
Don't you know, Vesh, that's wrong. It should be like, you know, free Pikachu inside or some shit like that.
Oh, wow.
That's when he'll get all the, you know, convicted child molesters coming and looking.
if we're going for the easy joke, yes.
I was going to say, this could technically be a honeypot effort. You could be trying to draw them in and just keep Chris Hansen in the back of the van.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah, I haven't seen Chris. I want them to bring back To Catch a Predator. I like that show. It was fun.
Well, I imagine at this point, like
how about they just make a new one called To Catch a Hacker?
That's easy.
And get all the dumbest people on the earth that consider themselves hackers. That sounds like a much better show to me.
Did you see the
I'd watch it.
A couple of years ago when DEF CON rolled out their film contest, the winning entry, I believe it was shot on someone's cell phone, and it showed them doing basically a way to catch a hacker, and it showed it says Free Mountain Dew written in badly scrawled handwriting, I believe it was in crayon, stuck to a wall, and you see the guy walking by like he's walking to his room and he turns and sees it. Kind of like a Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote cartoon thing going on there. And so he turns and runs down the hallway to go get the Mountain Dew. And that's when the net comes up around him around on the floor and he gets dragged off by somebody. It was funny. Looks like
I'm
they
amazed
shot
at how fast they found a net.
I think they talked to FBI or NSA that were visiting for DEF CON.
Wouldn't that be awesome if the agency had to resort to Wile E. Coyote style tactics to catch people?
That'd be great.
Acme thumb drives.
Painting tunnels to like a Starbucks on the side of a building.
Oh, caffeine this way. So okay.
Moving on.
So why don't we talk about some exposing cyber attacks against hacktivists?
Exposure. Oh, I like exposure.
Is this the one with the Iranians?
Yeah.
It's a motherboard story where, supposedly Iranians were exposed attacking, activists by researchers. Yeah, it sounds like you already have an opinion on this story.
I have lots of opinions. I think that they found out that Iranians are targeting activists. Is that that's kind of the crux of it?
Yeah, that's basically what it's talking about.
Is anybody surprised? I woke up this morning for the probably 75,000th time in a row, and I was like, oh, my God, holy shit, I woke up this morning. Wait a minute, is Iran still trying to discover hacktivists and activists alike? I mean, it's like saying, oh, but wasn't there something unique in the way that they found them? There has to be something more to this than just Iran found activists.
Ooh.
Okay, no, so Coop, why don't you read it to us? Tell us about it real quick.
All right. Well, it shows here, late last year, a group of hackers, likely linked to the Iranian government, reorganized the infrastructure supporting their cyber attacks. The hackers built it so their malware, which was infecting Iranian human rights activists and dissidents at home and abroad, would contact several servers under their control. At that point, several independent researchers who had been tracking Iranian hackers for 3 years already saw an opportunity. So they registered a series of domains linked to the hackers' infrastructure and waited. For the next 6 months, whenever an Iranian human rights activist got attacked, the malware would send his or her information back to the hackers. At the same time, the two researchers as well. Quoted here, they never noticed that they were completely monitoring the whole thing for several months.
Oh, well.
And
those brave people.
Yeah, happens to be a technologist with Amnesty International and a fellow at Citizen Lab. Just seems funny. They didn't notice it at all. So what were you saying, Gush?
No, I was just saying those brave, brave people, they sat back and they monitored for several months without charging in with weapon in hand. Brave. It's bravery is what it is.
Pinky, I'm curious real quick. How long do you guys, when you're teaching folks how to get into this stuff, as in how to get into the Defender Blue Line stuff, how long do you usually coach folks to to monitor sources before taking some kind of action?
We try to say a while, but people are impatient, so they don't monitor all that long. Because patience is a virtue that no student possesses.
So what is a little while? What's the intended length and what's the actual result?
How many nanoseconds are we talking here?
Maybe half. No. Part of the problem is that we're focusing on a competition, so you're not going to monitor all that long compared to a real-world scenario where you might want to monitor for more than, let's say, 5-10 minutes at a time, ideally. You know, you might want to make that more a day, a week, whatever your premise is. I think a lot of it depends on what are you doing and what are you looking for.
Well, right, and that's actually the point I'm pushing here is, okay, so you can't just train for the test, right? You have to train for a concept so that you think your way through a problem when you're not in the middle of the test. At least that would be my hope, right? So correct me where I'm wrong on this, because it's teaching the concept, not a specific practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is your normal practice when you're trying to... And let me dig a little deeper here. When discovering that there has been some kind of incursion and you find someone on the network, is the current best practice viewed as monitor longer, cut them off, go after them with a sharp stick? What's the method here? What's currently the popular mode of thought?
I'm going to lean toward probably the most popular one is kill them off, even though ideally you're already compromised at that point. So it might not be a bad idea to monitor just a while longer to try to get a better idea of how far they end. I mean, if you've been capturing all your network data to that time, then life is great. You can just go look back and look through that, you know, for their source IP or whatever and see when the first time it came in. But let's be honest, most of us best practices don't mean reality. So
it's true. And that's, again, that goes back to the whole, if you look at the way the tool sets were around the time that Clifford Stoll wrote The Cuckoo's Egg, well, when The Cuckoo's Egg, the story from there took place, there is a great explanation in my mind for kind of having we found that you're here. We're now able to detect what you're up to. We're going to go ahead and use this as an opportunity, a learning opportunity, to observe and try to gather some intel before taking actual steps. Because the second I see you and just cut you off, as long as it isn't actively malicious in a way that prevents that damages the system or the data of others, right? So if it's a misuse, if it's, oh, look, I found a way that I can, if there was a way to access a service or server and I'm using part of your bandwidth and your CPU time, but it's not wrecking everything for everyone else, I guess that leaves the door open for longer term monitoring. Would that be fair? Or is the idea at that point, the second you see it, bam, you slam the portcullis down, and you just attempt to say, okay, find another way, and I'll keep watch?
I personally prefer what you just said, you know, monitor a while longer as long as they're not causing true chaos, bringing down something, you know. Monitor and try to figure out what their end goal is, because, you know, it might be something different than what's apparent right now, and it could, if you can figure it out all, you can defend it against them better, have them get bored about you, and, you know, find a different target. And I think most people would just, however, kill it and say, well, they were in here. Whoops. And what? Then you'd be like, well, what happens if they're here again tomorrow through a different port because you didn't fix actually the underlying problem?
That, no, that's a very good point. You're actually treating the symptom, not repairing the issue. That's a very good point. Is that what you observed, Coop, when you were doing Net Wars not that long ago?
Well, Net Wars, it wasn't quite that advanced. It was there were a lot of levels. That what you're talking about sounds more, you know, like a bad day on like a system admin job, or, you know, more advanced type of competition. Like a later day of CCDC, they have what was it? Heck, remind me, Pinky. What was the where they actually do attack and defense?
Oh, that depends on which level, Coop. At Nationals, they're going after you on the first day, definitely.
Well, I'm not talking about like the red team volunteers, but like the players. Don't the players get to attack and defend at some point too?
That's only for Panoply, not CCDC.
Oh, okay.
At the national level, there's on the, you know, final day while they're telling the results, they do a 2.5-3 hour event, mini Panoply, which the actual competition's going to be in October.
Ah. Is that still the CCDC teams?
No. It can be any team that's not related to CCDC, other than the fact that the same people who run CCDC also run Panoply.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask us to move forward. I know I'm the one who's been holding us here. Pinky, what's your first story tonight?
Yeah, so apparently Microsoft has just announced a professional degree program to fill the skills gap, and this was featured on TechCrunch. This program is featured only toward data scientists because, you know, that's a hot new trend right now of data science, big data, etc. And they're trying to tackle the issue of how young people might have their, you know, degree, but they don't have that much experience. And then you get the mid-career people who just need to build on their previous experience, not necessarily go through the whole traditional four-year degree program per se. It's handled through edx.org, which is a nonprofit online learning website founded by Harvard and MIT. And there's a total of 10 classes, and it's a total of $516. So it sounds like a good idea. Each class requires between 4 to 8 hours. But I don't know how I feel about this. You know, to me, it almost feels like a really long certification program, not necessarily a degree program per se.
And we all know certification programs is where people make money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, that's the last thing you'd want a data scientist to do is learn math, right? I mean, I don't see anywhere in here where it's like, oh, you learn how to be a data scientist, but there's no math class. I'm like, wait a minute, am I just supposed to run R? Oh, wait a minute, no, there's no thing on how to run queries or do modeling with R or anything like that. It's just, oh, you come pay us money and then we'll certify you and then you can be in the other certification pool. It's like, we're not going to actually give you a job.
No.
But, well, we'll take your money.
To that point, there is a program provided through Coursera, and it's actually like a data analytics program taught through John Hopkins that you can take online. And actually it doesn't go through the math portion, but it does teach you more of the concepts through R, so you could do your data modeling through that. Again, I think there's about 10, but it ends up being quite a bit more. I think about twice the price.
Well, there's a bunch of this shit for free. Like, there's a Patrick JMT on YouTube that walks through all the math behind this stuff. And then there's, you know, you can go on Udacity and Coursera and what the heck, the OCW, the open courseware, just Do it yourself. Don't pay Microsoft. Don't pay Microsoft.
Okay, wait. Now, hold on. You can't. There's a certain line where someone else on the distant end of this, you go through all the classes and online stuff you want. You can watch all the videos from HackerCons, from archive.org, whatever you want to do. But the point is that if you don't have a piece of paper that says you know something according to someone else, it is sometimes harder to turn that into a proof to the folks who are going to hire you. So this is where we get into the argument sometimes with folks saying, well, security certifications are bogus or they have their place, or it's the same argument all over again. If you're going to go and say, I spent all this time and effort going through this course material, what do you have to show for it at the end that you can then hand over to someone else that can convert that supposedly into a higher ranking when looking for a job?
I've taken the opposing viewpoint several times. I have switched my viewpoint on this three or four times just in going to the bathroom today. I mean, come on. It's like, I don't always have the same opinion. It depends on what side of the
cup. Or what you had for breakfast, apparently. Okay. Hang on one second.
Mr. Robot.
There you go.
You have a totally different perspective on this, though. You're a veteran of the industry. Compared to, say, somebody like me that's not a veteran of the industry that's trying to get in, still knocking on the door saying, hey, I love it, I want to get into it. If I don't have a piece of paper or someone that will vouch for me that I know my mouth from my hole in my ass, I might as well just end up working at a gas station.
I think that requires an adapter of some kind.
You can't get a job without, something to back you up, whether it be a person that says, hey, this person's great, you should hire him, or a piece of paper. You can easily say, don't pay for it. Well, you're going to pay for it one way or another. You're going to have to network your ass off until somebody says, hire this fucker, or I'm going to kill you, or something crazy. Something absolutely balls insane to get your ass through the door if you don't have a piece of paper. Because, unfortunately, it's very true. It's not what you know, it's who you know. But in the end, if you can't prove anything, it doesn't matter if you spent 100 years on YouTube or whatever watching videos if nobody believes shit from you. Social engineering aside, what have you, it's you're not going to get through the door.
And as a corollary,
it'll be like an interview that they had to do for the position, especially like a government job. They have to interview so many people and before they give it to their buddy that they've already picked before they even listed the job.
I don't know. It seems like there's an awful lot of people at Geekdom here in San Antonio and a few other spaces and up in Austin and whatnot who don't have shit for as far as paper goes, but they seem to be making a pretty good hay out of it.
So it's curious how they got there. That's the reason for the Security Endeavors podcast, is to try to get an angle on some of the stories of how people got their start, because there seems to be a lot of conflicting information out there, right? Between, to shorten this, between everybody who is self-employed versus those who are part or attached to larger organizations versus self-taught versus a piece of paper. Because I've met people who have the paper who don't seem to have the experience to back it up. And then I've seen people who have all the experience in the world, but since they don't have the sheet of paper, that plays differently too. There are pluses and minuses on all sides all the freaking time. There is no one answer, and there's not necessarily a good answer.
My primary problem is more that they're calling this a professional degree program. So I'm worried if this trend continues, before you know it, it's going to bleed over more to our security area. So now you're going to have, your normal certifications like Network Plus, A Plus, whatever. Then you're going to have to start possibly having a college degree or some form of it. And maybe when you're at your mid-career point or whatever, you're going to start needing to also have professional degree programs, unless they clearly make the fact that this is basically the same thing as certifications, I'm not a big fan of how they're doing this different wording because, this could be corporations being greedy again, this whole certification crap again. Just now, here's another track to steal more of your money.
Vesh, what were you about to say?
Well, I mean, and that's not for the corporation to do. That's only for universities to do, dang blang it. So. Well, I don't know, man. I just, and by the way, I heard your Security Endeavors cross promotion like a mofo. That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Thanks. Self-plugging. So, hi.
Listen to Sciatic Nerd's other stuff because it doesn't include us jibber jabbing. More informational.
Actually learned something.
Oh, come on now. But thank you. I appreciate the team support. Thank you.
So you're saying that our sponsors have totally wasted their time because you're not going to learn anything from this podcast?
Oh, no. You'll learn several things.
You'll learn how to social engineer us. That's what you're going to learn.
No.
Throughout this, we're going to say what our favorite color is, our mother's maiden name, when we were born, etc.
My voice
What was the name
is
of your first pet,
there,
Pinky?
I think its name might have been Cooper.
Okay, here's something you can take away today that is actually of value no matter where you go. If you are using a knowledge-based, the questions, whenever you create an account somewhere and you are asked what was your best friend's last name in high school, that sort of thing, please do not actually give that answer. Answer with something else that you document separately, or just know that that's what you've done is your pattern. And that's your answer to the knowledge-based ones, because that way, even if someone was able to look up and discover using social media what the name of that person was, or whatever the color of your first car was, whatever it is, name it something, use a different piece of information. When they ask about the car, use your favorite song. They ask about what your favorite flavor of ice cream is, go ahead and say the color blue. Answer differently.
So what does the color blue taste like?
That's a different podcast, I understand. But you can find stuff about out there if you look. What are you saying there, Pinky?
I'm going to argue with that because I agree, knowledge-based questions are bad. Even the NIST article about, two-factor authentication is no longer secured through SMS touches on this briefly. But the problem is that if you're going to say, okay, I'm going to challenge knowledge-based, questions by answering the wrong thing, how are you going to remember what the hell you're supposed to answer then? Well, if you say, what's my favorite color, you're going to have to remember back maybe 2-3 years ago, be like, crap, I told myself I was going to answer this honestly. What was the actual question?
Thought it was like cookies and cream.
Well, whatever the answer is, because, my PIN is still 54321, because I had to change it up from that code they gave away in Spaceballs. The challenge, I think, is that you have to follow your own pattern. In other words, I'm suggesting you establish your own pattern. Find
your own alternate.
Patterns
are bad.
Patterns are fantastic. What do you mean patterns are bad?
Well, because if you follow the same pattern all the time, people can stalk you easier, man.
Why are you stalking me? Wait a minute. Yes. So you're.
Because I have nothing better to do.
Well, okay.
I'm just tightening your tinfoil underoos right now.
Uh huh. Those underoos are getting kind of chafy. Probably rusting. I need to change them. So once a month, whether I need to or not. The problem I'm finding is that if I don't use a pattern of verifiers or knowledge based stuff, whatever the answers are, I'm saying establish a pattern that doesn't line up with the actual real world of what you're expecting. The original example I had heard of this was on a podcast, a different podcast, and they had suggested it, that they had used. It said, what was your, I believe it was, where did you go to high school? And the answer was the make and model of their first car. Just know what you're rotating your answers as. So yes, you make a point. It makes it a little harder for you to remember. But if you know that you always answer, if someone says up and you say down, aside from being, like every other set of siblings I've ever met that are just a little at odds from time to time, the answers become your standard response, and they're just not public information is the point. So it's just that's something useful you can take away. And as we transition, towards the hacks of the week, we definitely want to thank our sponsors, especially our newest sponsor, Dangerous Things, who delivers custom gadgetry for the discerning hacker and biohacker. So check them out at dangerousthings.com, because if your organization is willing to consider the pirate ship of fools that's currently talking before you, please talk to us using either the SATX Hackers hashtag or at SATX Hackers on Twitter. And we would love to actually talk and represent your company a little bit if you don't mind us saying some crazy things. So thank you very much. And as we move into the hacks of the week, Cooper, why don't you kick us off?
Yar, give us the booty. And let's go ahead and go to an inhabit. Oh, wait, sorry. I went ahead of myself. We need to go back to one of our news sources that I'm sure we totally should try and social engineer to be one of our sponsors, because we've said their URL so many times. TheHackerNews.com. Two hackers went over 1 million air miles each for reporting bugs in United Airlines. No, there are no bugs there at all, are there? But anyway, the article then talks about two computer hackers have earned more than 1 million frequent flyer miles each from United Airlines for finding and reporting multiple security vulnerabilities in the airline's website. So one of them happens to be 19 years old. He's a security researcher from the Netherlands and earned 1 million air miles from United Airlines for finding around 20 security vulnerabilities in the software systems of the airline. And last year, Chicago-based United Airlines launched a bug bounty program to invite security researchers and bug hunters for finding and reporting security holes in its websites, software apps, and web portals. Under its bounty program, United Airlines offers a top reward of 1 million miles for reporting remote code execution, RCE flaws, 250,000 miles for medium security vulnerabilities, and 50,000 frequent flyer miles for low severity bugs.
So actually would you, this brings up a question I'm going to start with asking Vesh, would you be willing to work for literally peanuts? Well, okay, how about air miles? Instead of actually getting a payout. Because if you think about it, how much is a million frequent flyer miles, right? I mean, that's probably worth, what, $40,000? How many point? I don't know what the point translation is, but that could be of significant value, couldn't it?
Wasn't there an article similar to this a while back where a kid basically flew to DEF CON on the miles he found earned from bugs?
Well, wait a minute. So first off, I wouldn't accept airline mile one from United Airlines. It's a shitty airline.
Well, then I'm guessing you wouldn't apply to their bug bounty program.
Well, that and United Airlines gave 1 million miles to Chicago-based United Airlines gave 1 million miles to somebody who is decidedly not based in Chicago.
Yeah.
They're in the Netherlands. I mean, this is not a very risky strategy for them.
Well, they do fly there.
What?
They do fly there.
I'm sure they do, but do you think that they're flying from the Netherlands to anywhere they're probably flying from the Netherlands to the States, but do you really think that they're flying anywhere what's in the Netherlands? Is that Ouija's? Is that where the Ouija's are?
This is not just about the fjords. We're talking in the Netherlands. You're very close to the heart of Europe, quote unquote, Belgium. You can get around other parts of Europe from that location. It's very central. Anyway, until he comes back, because he doesn't realize that his sound cut out for a second. I'm going to ask you to repeat that, please.
All right. So these guys already have to deal with Ryanair. Do we really want them to put up with United too?
Well, I wasn't actually going to. It almost sounds like if you had found a bug in the software, the scheduling software for Greyhound bus lines, that they would offer you tickets across the U.S. I'm asking if you would work, forget the company in this case. Would you be willing to work for not money? That was the real question. And that's what I'm asking Pinky. Would you do it? If you could get free travel across the country or from wherever you happen to be, something that isn't traveling on the back of a sloth or, through the mud bug tunnels of somewhere, would you use an alternate form of payment?
I think it would really depend on what the payment is. Like, you know, for this, it's obviously, do you have a problem with the airline itself? You know, whoever you find the bug with, you know, there's certain airlines I'm not going to fly with either. And also comes down to, great, I won 1,000,000 miles. I'm still broke because I'm a college student, so I can go fly there and then I'm screwed. So it really comes down to what the reward is. You know, miles probably aren't going to do me much good because I don't have a lot of time. I don't have the money for a hotel or doing anything interesting there per se. Sure, you can go to places where you have friends, whatever. Would I be willing for maybe, like, if I submitted to a grocery store, take free food? Sure, why not? That's something I can use, you know. It really comes down to what are they offering and does it make sense?
Gold-plated donuts.
Does H-E-B have a bug bounty program?
I do not know, but we should find out.
Well, they have bug spray and bounty the quicker picker-upper. Does that count? Sorry.
That's good.
Well, you know, I have to throw out at least a little cheese now and again, just to remind you. Vesh, you never answered the question.
We're not going there. This is not that kind of podcast. But,
yeah, I know.
Which question?
Which was, would you work for something that wasn't cash?
You mean, would I... Yeah, I find myself working as a slave for lots of things. I mean...
Womp womp.
But
I mean, it's a... Would you work for room and board? It's like, you mean slavery? Yes.
Well, that's actually not entirely accurate. Because room and board, that's called Airbnb, right? Or bed and breakfast.
Sorry,
are you saying
sorry.
That bed and breakfast is actually slavery, just ensconced in a pretty funky bear rug on the floor? What are you saying?
Sorry, indentured servitude.
Are we all camp counselors here? What are you talking about?
No, actually, I kind of support anything. If you want to work and whatever you do, like in airline miles is a good way, keeps your money out of the tax man's hands, yeah. Then do it. Do it. You know what? Work for, you want a new computer, go work for it and then just get that computer. You want to work for travel, just work for those miles. That's just whatever you do, make sure that it can't be taxed or it can be sufficiently hidden. You know, so basically what I'm saying here is take up armed resistance against the government, I think is what I'm saying.
That's what I heard too.
No, sorry, that's not what I said.
Thank you.
So,
thank
I
you
thought
for
you were
team.
The Republican on this podcast. What do you mean? I'm confused.
Well, stop that.
Well,
stop that.
If you're actually looking at which side is a little bit more decidedly on the smaller government side, I'm gonna have to go with the Republican side.
Oh, you don't want to field the Johnson? Come on.
So the field. Oh, stop that, man.
Why the hell would I vote for Gary Johnson? He's got the policies of both of them, but he just likes weed.
JohnsonSingles.com, people. Feel the weed.
Okay, each week that gets a little stranger. I'm beginning to wonder. At some point, when do you bring in the mole people? I'm just curious.
Give us time.
It has to happen naturally.
Oh, okay. Well, so if we're talking
if
naturally.
Johnson, then you feel the Morlocks.
Can we talk about being hot, 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 Pinky? Can we, please?
Why not? So, according to the Hacker News, there was the first ever ransomware for smart thermostats, and it's hot, hot, hot. So, I'm going to argue that first this article is misleading. If you just look at them, you're like, holy shit, I got to go, you know, take out my Nest right this second before I get ransomware.
Exactly.
No, it's just a proof of concept. Currently, it was presented at, you know, DEF CON 2 weeks ago. And basically, the problem is that a U.S. thermostat that had a large LCD, purposely keeping it, you know, kind of vague, runs a modified version of Linux and has an SD card slot. And it allows you to load custom settings so you can have your own pretty wallpaper, you know. My preference, if I had one, would probably just have Rick Astley on it so every time someone walked by,
yes. They'd
be Rick Gold.
That's awesome.
So basically, you know, the thermostat does check the files it's running and executing on it and basically allows them to load malware. Give them the classic screen of pay us $300, otherwise it's going to be stuck at 99 degrees and you're going to be miserable. The downside of this is that you have to actually convince the user to put it on their SD card and plug it into their thermostat.
Was this an actual DEF CON talk? Like, did
this
make the conference talk page?
It was probably in the IoT village.
It was.
Not the actual track.
Okay. I hope this didn't make the actual track because I know two or three papers that didn't make it. That were far more impressive than, hey, look, it's an old version of embedded Linux. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, it can be ransomware. That's so, Christ.
So you're saying that villages aren't good?
No, what I'm saying is that if these were a track, if this was accepted as a track, you know, it's like the car hack. All right, we're sick of it. Let's get back to doing like it. This is not an epic hack. This is not win. This is not anything. This is a, this is, you know, this thing can be done by, you know, 2 12-year-olds with a fucking SD card. And somehow that gets into DEF CON, but, Weeks's presentation on mass infecting, like, several, I don't want to get into it, but let's just say his shit was way cooler, and that's not just because, I'm not saying that just because I work with the fellow, full disclosure. I saw what he had submitted, by and large, and it was way more entertaining than, look how I hacked this thermostat with age-old
Okay, I'm gonna say...
Well, it's kind of like attacking a, you know, a fridge or a microwave or an oven with age-old Android.
This was just at a workshop. The article misquoted on purpose, probably to make it sound bigger. It was just at a workshop, and it was literally just a workshop at probably IoT.
Yeah, I'm willing
Shame
to bet.
Shame on you, Hack News. Shame
did it
on
say
you.
Who did the workshop? Was it like Seth Waller or something?
It gives the names. It's Ken Munro and Pentest Partners.
Okay.
But it doesn't say which village it was. It just says on the IoT Village, yeah.
Okay.
IoTVillage.org shows it.
I was wondering, because if it would have been Seth, I would have been laughing, because he actually... I could have sworn he was talking about something completely different.
How much did Pentest Partners pay for this? How much did you pay for this? Pentest Partners, I'm looking
Pentest
at you.
No, okay.
I actually want to read this line.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm gonna deviate from my whatever of not reading things. This is not just a hypothetical scenario. This is exactly what Ken Munro and Adam Tierney of UK-based security firm Pentest Partners have demonstrated at the DEF CON 24 security conference in Las Vegas last Saturday.
Yes.
No, 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 no. They demonstrated something at a village that anybody could get into, and all they demonstrated was that you could do something on a fucking SD card on old-ass Linux.
Anybody can get into
Which, by the way, should, if you go to distrowatch.com, apparently you can look up old-ass Linux, and I'm sure you'll be able to find it just... No, I'm kidding. Yes,
go
it's true.
Punish Pentest Partners. They should pay for this type of
No, but they
like...
just did it as a demo. They did it as a demo, right?
And then they lied. And then they lied.
Ouch. I thought it was more technically
this
social
is not just hypothetical, except for it was hypothetical.
Okay, calm down. You don't have to sweep the leg, Johnny. Uh-huh. It's okay. No, okay, so you make a good point. So look, so, grandstanding to get a headline isn't new.
What? We beat what?
Oh, it's no. Dead. You made a good point, though. He has a good point. If it's being presented as though it was something alarmist, because that's what sells eyeballs these days, because I can't say papers, because they don't use paper anymore. You say what?
Paper? What?
Yeah, well, it's a digital time spent on a website looking at ads. Kitchen soap. Anyway, the point is that if we look at the rate of the number of stories that came out of DEF CON that are now being touted as dun-dun-dun, which I'm not sure how to say that other than... what I just did. There's got to be more to it. There's got to be more meat to the story, and I think that's what Vesh is getting at. Am I right, Vesh?
Well, I mean, no, this is kind of blurring the line of sponsored content, is what I'm saying.
Okay. No, see, now there it is. That's what you were trying to get at before. I thought you were calling out something else. You're just saying that this is just, yeah, okay. So, and now we're from our sponsors.
It's sponsored content.
Okay.
It's sponsored content without.
Well, so thankfully, we actually have some sponsored content too. Actually, just the podcast itself. Since this is a sponsored podcast, I should probably ask you to talk to us about those chip and pin cards there, Vesh.
All right. So, this was another, I forget, was this Black or DEF CON?
I'm going to say this black hat because the picture, picture shows that they have black hat background there.
Okay, so because this is an ATM, it got to be a black hat. So what this basically was another Hacker News article, and I'm actually kind of proud of whoever this Swati, I'm sorry, Mr. Swati, or whoever, Mrs. Swati, if the picture isn't clear, and your name is insanely unpronounceable to me as an American, so I'm sorry if I F up your name, Swati Khandelwal. Oh, no, it is a she. She. Well, it's a confusing picture, and I don't know foreign names.
No, it's okay, so let's...
It's, like,
let's...
tiny, too.
Okay. Moving on.
Just go for it. Go for it.
Either way, this person did a good job reporting because they went and they talked to Todd Beardsley, and Todd said, hey, listen, this chip thing, this hack on this ATM, it's really just a card that is capable of impersonating a chip. It's not cloning, which is key to understanding this. Anybody can make a chip skimmer. However, cloning a smart card or a SIM chip is beyond reach.
See, and that is an ex that it, man, I could hug you, but people would talk. The reality is that you can, yes, you can try a replay attack if you want. You can try to duplicate some of the information, but you're not actually going to be able to duplicate the key material itself. It's good stuff. There is actually, proving out the difference in this story makes the story from the Hacker News in this case from, I admit I can't pronounce the nice person's name either. But it's the point of, it's a card capable of impersonating a chip, but it is not cloning, just as Mr. Beardsley is quoted as saying. So that's good. And full disclosure is a helpful thing. There is a need for us to reiterate that I don't think that chip and pin is necessarily broken if implemented correctly. Is that a fair statement, Vesh?
So if implementing it correctly, I mean, you can, so basically just skimming the APDUs and putting yourself between the chip and the reader is enough to kind of, I mean, it's physical access by any other stretch. So we're good. I think we're good. We can move on from this.
We do, I just want to mention, you mentioned skimming APDUs. And APDUs are the processing, what is it?
I think it's the application protocol data unit.
There you go. Thank you. Yes. So that's actually hugely important. If you've ever wanted to tinker with smart cards or learn about them, actually APDUs are the way to do it. And if you look up ISO 7816, and there are four parts of it plus add-ons, go look that up and you can actually read all about the standards. You'll have to look in a couple of different places, by the way, because normally they want you to pay for that stuff. But if you are kind of judicious with your search engine usage, if your search foo is strong enough, you will find the information you need to at least get started. Because it turns out there's even a couple of articles out there about turning a Raspberry Pi and some of the lighter weight embedded devices into plaything smart cards that you can tinker with for programming. So, again, if you're looking to learn about that, there are valuable tools out there that you can get to help you build this, to build your understanding. So, there we go. Wanted to make sure we had some value.
Search the GND smart cards. It's like Jitski and I forget how to pronounce it. They're two German names, and they wrote the entire smart card APDU standard. So go look them up. GND, Google and douchebag. That's
one way to get that out there. So that's hilarious, by the way.
Jitski and Dervent or something like that. I forget what the hell. I don't recall how to pronounce the names.
Yeah, I'm actually looking it up right now. It's Giseki and Deverint, and I'm sure I'm butchering it even worse. But yes, it's www.gi-de.com is the company website. And they are massive in this industry. There's another one that actually, HID, which is international because they absorbed a bunch of the early developers in this space. So, man, aside from really butchering the name of this company's, the pronunciation of this company's name, they actually are giants in this industry. And if you can learn more about it, it's good stuff. So there we go. All right. So back to our rundown of things to talk about. Let's take a stab for a moment at kind of a surprising thing to me. I mean, it's still alarmist in a way, but from Ars Technica, there's an article that talks about how Volkswagens, going back for years, can be unlocked using an Arduino. Now, this doesn't mean that if you buy an Arduino Uno over a weekend at a store, you're going to go out tomorrow and just start unlocking cars. But what it does mean is that the folks from Wired got together with some researchers and figured out how to use SDR, or software-defined radio, to trick these Volkswagens into giving up the ghost. It actually talks about that every car they've sold since around 1995, they were able to get together with these researchers and find a way to extract the cryptographic key that is common to many of the keys used for remote entry on a Volkswagen. So just having that piece of information alone won't give you much, but if you can actually combine it with another piece of information, bam, you have the method to open more than just Volkswagens, because it turns out Volkswagen kind of might have some of the same, share some of the same vendors, like Alfa Romeo, Citroen, Fiat, Ford, Mitsubishi, Nissan. I like how Ford is fourth or fifth down in there, kind of not up at the front. because, you know, it could be bad for certain models produced in other countries. I should not stop, by the way. So Fiat, Ford, Mitsubishi, Nissan, Opel, and Peugeot, according to the folks who they were talking to. It's an older crypto scheme used in key fobs called HiTag 2. So if you research HiTag 2, you might just have an exciting time on your hands if you are an Arduino programmer. If not, I bet you you could use some of that search foo to go dig something up too. But the point is that this interesting little technology has been traced to some car thefts going on in Houston right now. Who would have thought that tinkering with an artistic programming toy would yield the potential to steal a car, or at least get in the car? And, because, I mean, unlocking the door is not the same as driving it off, right? So, just further note, if you are a person who has a car and you drive, please don't leave anything tasty-looking within view. None of... only you know that there are only gym socks in that bag. Everyone else thinks there could be a laptop in there, or worse. So, follow the very simple rule. Never leave anything visible in your car that you might think could look tasty to someone else.
Wait, did I miss the part? Did you just say that there were car thefts in Houston?
I did mention that this led to potential car thefts in Houston, yes.
Oh, it led to potential car thefts? Wow, wait a minute. Are you telling me that there's property crime in Houston and cars are getting stolen? Anybody informed Houston PD on that one?
So I didn't call the tip line, if that's what you mean. No, I was okay. Trying to just basically share the idea that I know I said that water is wet, but the fact is that the Arduino is what actually made the water wet. And that's what was more interesting about the story, is that it turns out this piece of tech that drives a NeoPixel will actually also help you unlock a car door if you know what you're doing. So that's kind of an interesting story, I thought.
Isn't there currently a problem with the Arduino blah 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 overseas and domestic shipping? Like, wasn't somebody bitching about that?
Well, that one I haven't seen, because I mean, so I got so. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, there was they had to change the name to Genuino because of something. Europeans got some sand in their ass cracks.
Well, so they're I can't speak to the level of silicates in their deposit zone, but I can certainly I know that the AT Mega is the knockoff chips that are out there. Now, the one that I heard about was that they were knocking off the biohacking chips, but I thought Coop was going to talk about that later.
No, go ahead and talk about it now. It's a nice lead-in.
So, Coop, is it true? Are people actually stealing the designs of these chips?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The biohacking chips?
No, I mean, inserts? What do you mean people are stealing designs?
Well, there was a design. I thought there were vendors that were getting in trouble because there were international vendors who were claiming a design, and it turned out it might have actually come from someone else.
I now know what you're talking about. Yeah, what I posted on our IRC/Slack.
Yeah, is that off limits, or are we NDA'd? Can we not talk about that?
Well, no, we're not NDA'd. They are supposedly NDA'd, which I think is hilarious, because they totally have an add-up with pictures from the guy's own research showing it as a product for sale. It just seemed kind of ridiculous to me. And, totally posted it to forum that has a bunch of, you know, beta testers for Dangerous Things. And, you know, also happens to be, you know, a few guys from the, you know, Grindhouse Wetware as well, the people that designed the, you know, item in question. And everybody tried to, you know, order from the supplier at least. I think the minimum, the smallest order we all put in was 5. One guy was trying to get like 1,000 of them, saying he needed like 1,000 in 30 days. And they were trying to sell one for like $5 each.
Oh, wow.
But it ended up with a lot of, you know, double talk from the supplier saying, no, they couldn't sell it. They didn't have any in stock, but they'd happy, you know, if I had a design for an item to produce it for me. It's like, excuse me, this is a ad for putting this item for sale, yet you're totally saying it's not for sale? Excuse me, I'm confused here. I know things are different in China, like language compared to English, but you seem to have a decent grasp enough grasp of it now. Why are you not selling me what you have up for sale for $5 each?
Right?
And no minimum order. Minimum order is 1. You know, it's wow. Like, are you telling me that you're trying to bait and switch me? No, really? I thought you weren't a used car salesman. Did I happen to walk into Ugly Duckling Motors? What happened? I'm confused. You're saying my credit's good, but, you know, I need to supply the design for you to make? What the crap?
That's weird.
Well, yeah, it totally ended up with about, you know, 5 or 10 of us trying to order this part, and nothing happened from it. I do believe that the guys from Grindhouse are still trying to do it. And the fun part is I've totally been able to make contact with Tim Cannon, the guy that designed it, and he is totally down for giving us an interview on it if we want. So it might be a, you know, nice little supplement when we get busy at some point to get a nice interview with him on Skype, what have you, and go from there.
Wow. Well,
never know.
Maybe.
Either that or we might have a special Biohackers episode.
Dun, dun, dun.
Every so often.
Which reminds you, weren't you talking at some point about actually starting a biohacking podcast?
Yeah, that the same group that I discussed and got or ended up resulting in several of us ordering. There was a joke that came about from that as well when Dangerous Sayings, another article about them, accidentally was called Dangerous Minds in the article. And I was like, well, that sounds like a fun podcast name. You know, Dangerous Minds. You know, biohackers doing dangerous things with their bodies of sorts. And, that might actually come to fruition, but I don't know. You know, since they let anybody talk in villages, according to Vesh, I don't know if any, even since I got to talk in a village, I don't know if I should, you know, start up a podcast now. Poke, poke. But unfortunately, he's not here. Anymore. He had to step out for
emergencies.
I guess I will have to poke next week. Damn.
And I just feel like this podcast is turning into, let's just, you know, brag about our other podcasts that aren't Saha Says.
This one doesn't exist yet.
Hey,
are you feeling? Wait, are you going to start a new podcast too now? Come on, Pinky, we need to have one based on ACDC.
Yeah, I was just going to make that joke, but I don't know if I'll have time.
I was going to say that.
Oh, you got all the time in the world. You're only working on a PhD.
Oh, gee whiz.
Oh yeah.
Only a PhD.
Well, I think we should actually make a podcast called Just Snoring, and it's that because that's all the time you've got left is while you're sleeping. Whatever you say in your sleep becomes your podcast, and then you write software that auto aggregates it and cuts it down to just the audible murmurs. So we'll hear finally the secrets of your thesis displayed for all before the release.
So, don't help with us. I've been dreaming of CCDC lately, so that's not going
to
help you out, man.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
sounds
try.
Like it might end up being like a number award-winning podcast, just like that movie Butts in Idiocracy. You know, 99 minutes of nothing but butts and farting.
Well, there was a movie once that was called The Cure for Insomnia, I think, that ran for something like 19 hours or something crazy. And that was
I thought that was C-SPAN.
No, that's just moving at the speed of politics, or so. No, wait, that was a tagline. Maybe that was a comedy. I could be wrong. But actually, I found in the rundown what Vesh was talking about, where he was referring to the fact that you couldn't say Arduino or Arduino. Apparently there was a split as we jump into Gadget Prawn. Cause I am a huge fan. I don't know if you guys tinker with these embedded systems, these inexpensive, devices like the Arduino or the Raspberry Pi and these embedded Linux machines, generally speaking, although some of them run other things other than Linux. The interesting thing here was Pimaroni, is a company that sells some add-on boards for these, devices. And what it turns out now is that they can't call it that anymore for some reason. There was an argument in between as sometimes happens in these kinds of arenas. You go to Pimaroni because they've got their blog, right? And it talks about, hey, we're working on getting this, contact. We want to find a company that is, that they can resell these Arduino boards. But apparently, TLDR, they're not accepting a distributor agreement because it's unfriendly to resellers, according to the firm. So basically, after the split of Arduino and Arduino, wait, that's the same name. How can you split but keep the same name? Apparently there's an argument, and if you click on the link that it takes you to, the short of it is that there was a falling out between the people who made up Arduino, and so now there are two different groups laying claim to the name. Because of this, they're actually going to make, one group is the steward of the Arduino IDE and libraries, and I guess the other one, owns, where does it say? It says Arduino SRL, also known as Smart Projects SRL, is the company that assembled the majority of the boards for Arduino LLC. And they run Arduino.org and own the trademark in Italy and other countries. So apparently in the US, it'll be called Arduino, and in everywhere else, it'll be called the Genuino name.
Wow.
So if you see Genuino, it's still Arduino. It's the same thing between Group A and Group B. It's like that age-old story of, well, it's mine. No, it's mine. So let's just cut it in half. You go your way, I'll go my way, and now this one is a fancy birthmark. I don't know. It's weird. But it's just pretty crazy. So
they're going to their G.I. Joes and go home?
It got ugly in November when one person renamed Smart Projects to Arduino SRL and then registered Arduino.org. And mm-hmm. And it just goes, there's a whole litany of all the dirty laundry essentially aired out there. So if you're an Arduino fan, then this might hurt your feelings. No, it means that we just have to be a little more aware, as now you'll probably find Notawino and Drunkawino and Smegarino and all sorts of other winos that you should be careful about when you go to order, so you'll have to check to see where it was produced. That's probably the real fallout to the rest of us, is that we won't always be getting the genuine product. Or should I say
American genuino. Components, Russian components, all made in Taiwan.
Yeah. It's entirely possible. I'm not putting that outside the realm of acceptable possibilities. But it just is one more story of I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. That's what it really seems like.
What do you mean that geeks are you?
Can we? The real question is, can we play a game called Everyone Get Along? Who wins?
No.
Huh? No, 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 nobody wins. No. Nobody wins that game.
Wait, Cooper, say yes and I'll say no. There you go.
Just because you told me to, I'll say maybe.
And I'll say yes.
And this is why we can't have nice things, people. And what's this people you speak of? Okay, so.
I feel like
you
if
mean
you got
there's something
genuino?
Outside the basement?
No, there's nothing. I checked recently.
Because we're all in the grandmother's basement right now.
We're sharing one grandmother? That could be really weird.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
I'm hoping what she says is something about the smart home for an apartment renter.
Oh, yeah, we can totally move to that. So, it's an interesting article. Generally, when you think of, you know, smart gadgets for your home, the most common one we all think about is probably Nest.
Sure.
If you try and install Nest in your apartment, one, good luck, and two, you're probably going to end up, you know, violating your renter's, you know, your lease, because you're not supposed to go mess with things like that. So this whole article's really a good intro, and it's on Ars Technica. Basically, there's three different developers you can go with. Developers is kind of a weird term they used. It's more, how do you actually control the smart devices? And you can do either HomeKit, which is from Apple. That is coming in iOS 10, which should be sometime this fall. The main problem with HomeKit is that it requires a hardware adaptation. So, you know, if you want a light bulb that you can control through HomeKit, they're going to have to make a special thing just for HomeKit to make it work. However, you have the benefit, it's voice controlled through Siri. There's Alexa with Amazon. And again, voice, you know, controlled. And that can be software rather than hardware, unlike Apple. Nest and Haiku have already added Alexa support, so you can say, Alexa, turn down the AC to be 60 degrees or whatever. Then finally, there's Zigbee and Z-Wave. They're both mesh networking systems that send information between all devices on the network, bound together by a hub. And they're especially good for people who want to fiddle around with their network device or their devices at home. They can have limited range, unlike Alexa and Apple, so keep that in mind when you're trying to do that. And finally, basically they go into what devices you can actually use your apartment, because again, we already established that you can't do your AC. So you can do your lock on your door if you're feeling adventurous. If you are. I don't think I'll ever feel so adventurous, especially after this podcast of allowing the door to be controlled through a smartphone away. There's smart lights, so you can control your lights. You know, kind of exciting. I don't know. I've seen people control it. I actually have a friend who has Alexa at home, and it's flaky as crap.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's so secure.
Batteries, but it's just like, you know, Alexa, turn off the living room lights. And it's like, I can't do that right now. I'm sorry.
You just turned off somebody's lights somewhere. You just did it.
Yes.
Some guys in Taiwan are like, what the hell, Americans?
That's right. And the other ones. Okay.
You can do kitchen devices if you so desire, like your crock pot. And then you can control your Roomba. So, hey, Alexa, turn the Roomba off.
Oh, that's awesome. No, Alexa, turn the Roomba on. I want to get a Roomba for my office and then have it controlled by Alexa, but the Roomba is connected somewhere else, right? So that if I call it out here, it just kicks off the Roomba in another city.
That'd be great.
I love it. Sorry, Coop, you were saying?
I was saying I didn't realize that Roombas were now, you know, connected.
Apparently they are.
That kind of creeps me out.
Well, yeah. But it's just, I think it's because cats need chariots.
Yeah.
Only if they're wearing shark hoodies.
Yes. Left shark hoodies.
So what we need in life, guys, is we need Roomba to have a pressure sensor on top to detect when the cat's there, and then automatically turns on and gives it a ride.
Dude, I can...
And then you need a, you know, video camera somewhere in the house that automatically turns on as a result to record this and automatically upload it to YouTube. That is what we need, so...
We can do that.
We don't need all this crap, we just need that.
Oh, okay, so forget the Internet of Things, we just need the Internet of Cats, which we already have.
We need more of it.
Come on, Internet, we can do this. We can build it, we can make it funnier.
I think we can.
Exactly.
I think we can, because the first time a friend of mine said, hey, I went out to go hunting this weekend, I didn't get anything, but what I did collect was the memory cards from my trail cams. I said, what the heck's a trail cam? He said, well, it's motion sensor activated, and it'll take a photo. I said, that seems kind of neat. So he went and showed me the video clips or the little photos, because the earlier model he had was simply, it just showed, you know, one or two of these night vision style photos, and it shows a deer eating in front of the feeder, right? So even if you weren't there, the deer came out, it checked out, said, oh, cool, you left me take out, thanks. And the deer eats and leaves. And so you get a chance to get a couple of pictures. I thought that was kind of interesting. And just thought it was neat that you could actually set that up and use it. But I figured just now, if you look for old trail cams on like Craigslist or something, you could probably pick those up, set them up at Roomba level, and you could probably catch this video of the cat. You just make
That'd
sure.
That'd be amazing.
You're saying a hotel, housekeeping individuals have not already bought a bunch of trail cams and left them in rooms? What?
How many Roombas are at hotel rooms with cats on them? Are you saying there's a cat
trail
or
trail cams?
Oh, well, no, those were nanny cams.
People are creepy. God, what do you do to your time?
Making the wheels fall off.
Well, he's a stay-at-home dad.
I gotta do a vestige job.
Yeah, well, yeah. So you got to add some trolling action. So there was a talk actually by Ed Skudis. I think I'm pronouncing that name right. I hope I am. From B-Sides Austin this last March. If you get a chance to look for his home automation presentation, some good stuff that relates to what this article is talking about. Some really good material. Thank you, Pinky, for talking with us about that, because I think it's awesome to think that you could use some of this stuff. There are limits, of course, to what should be done, right? But just the idea for being able to connect your voice recognition device with home automation devices, I do like the idea of that, because if I can automate the Blinky, I want to automate the Blinky. Not the Pinky, the Blinky. There's a difference. So
why can't we automate that too?
Alexa, make Pinky go Blinky. It's not happening. So
nope.
So apparently you're not going.
I need an adult.
Will I dream, Dave? Will I dream?
Hey, the fact that Hal is just IBM one letter off. Come on now. So, wait, that actually brought up a different story that I was wanting to bring up. Since we're talking about unique little one-off gadgets or automation-like gadgets, we do have in our rundown a story that was not claimed this week that I cannot pass by. And that is a story from Hackaday that talks about all of the unofficial electronic badges from DEF CON. And from the QueerCon badge this year that had all these unique, these beautiful traces that are all curved instead of straight lines.
Hand done, too.
Wow, hand done?
Those were hand drawn.
It's a beautiful, beautiful badge, and it looks like a ghost monster from a video game, or maybe just a very gentle young Cthulhu. I don't know. Take your pick. I'm not here to judge. But you have all these different, there are different brightness levels. It has literally hats and horns you can add to the badge that will interface with its programming. It even had, different, switches you could add to it that allow it to perform other functions. But you could get these, but you have to buy them early. The catch with all of these really neat, unique devices is you have to find where to purchase them, probably a couple or 3 months ahead of the conference. So if you're just thinking about where to get your hotel room for DEF CON 2 months out, you're way late to the game. The room blocks opened last week, people. I'm not kidding. If you're interested in staying at the hotel, the conference hotel for DEF CON, go search engine foo that stuff. You will find it. It's out there. And so think about all of this stuff months out, because some of these things are planned so far in advance to kind of make sure that some of this stuff can get pulled off. For example, DEF CON's electronic badge this year is electronic, and it's actually an x86 badge. That's right. It'll run the same kind of code as your regular desktop computer. And so it's got a really tiny amount of memory, 8K, but at least think about an ATPC badge. You just have to go and solder on the connection points to interface with it. So there's some amazing thing there. There is a really amazing badge by a group of guys who just decided to have some fun, and it looks like the character of Bender from Futurama.
Mm-hmm.
And this badge was harder to come by than anything else. There's the Darknet badge. There's a bunch of these really great and creative kinds of badges. And there's the I Can Reflow Merit badge, which is hilarious, which is actually someone using toaster ovens to surface mount solder boards on the phone.
Bad idea.
Of course it's a bad idea, but it's a merit badge. It's not a don't do this every day in your life, but It's just the idea that you could. And by the way, watched a really cool video from Adafruit about how to do surface mount soldering if you have the patience of a saint or want to play some very soothing music in the background and try not to kill other people. So there are, you know, because you're going to need patience to do this. There are so many other badges that were cool this year. And so I admit I was chasing the Blinky most of DEF CON. I was this year very, very distracted by all of the awesome blinking lights and LEDs brought into things. And if you, and thanks to a friend of mine, thanks Pinwheel, thanks for ruining LEDs for me forever, because now I know that it's kind of a bizarre physics trick that LEDs work anyway, that apparently there's a small gap. Pinky, have you ever looked at how an LED works?
I've heard this story before.
And Coop, have you heard this story?
No, I haven't. I like stories. So
good, good. Thank you. Now I can torture you with this story. So it turns out I always thought that light-emitting diodes were simply another form of little tiny filament, but no, I'm completely wrong. It turns out that it is the jumping of LEDs are light-emitting diodes. Diodes are one-way gates, basically, that allow electrical current to flow in one direction, and there's a gap between the components. I'm really messing this up, but go with me here. So essentially, the gap is what produces the distance of that gap and the amount of power flowing through there, I believe, is actually what leads to the type of light that is released. It's just amazing. So I actually got to take a picture with my phone using a magnifying tool and was able to see what he was talking about. So in this mainstream bluish-whitish LED, you can physically see the gap. It almost looks like if you've ever looked at a safety pin and you look at the shape there where the part that allows you to move the safety pin around to hook in place is what it kind of sort of looks like. It looks like you've got this little triangle and then a gap and then a bar, which represents the other side of the gap, and the current moving across that, jumping that gap, is the light that we get to see. So the next time you see a small blinking light embedded in the plug of a USB cable on the small end, marvel at how amazing it is that there's something able to be built and mounted there to make that light. And aside from that, just enjoy the fact that RGB LEDs are real, and you can wear them, and they blink, and they make your life happier. Or at least they make my life happier. Maybe you need to not do that. That's your business. Anyway, thank you for enduring this story time moment that went completely sideways, as we instead jump back in and talk about fake cell towers. Because if you thought that going to a security conference wasn't enough to make you wear security underoos, surprise, surprise, all over DEF CON, they had things called IMSI catchers. So basically, a chance to keep an eye on all of, or a great number of very talented people who think outside the box couldn't be passed up, according to this motherboard.vice.com story. And it basically goes on to explain that, yeah, you shouldn't trust any cell phone towers that were there around the conference at all, because they were all positioned and set up to watch folks and examine GSM signals all over the conference. Now, thankfully, not a lot of folks are using GSM these days, but you never know. The fact is that, Pinky, that tinfoil hat you keep tightening, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The more truth you learn, the more you read, the more you wind up looking like that guy, the guy who's now the center of and focus of all the memes from the History Channel, the one with his hands up saying aliens. We all get a little closer to that the more we read and participate in this podcast. Because, let me tell you, you don't trust anything around DEF CON, which is why I have taken to going old school, and no, not just pencil and paper, that would have been too easy. For taking notes at DEF CON, I have gone all the way back to bringing up the handspring visor. I have gone back in time, I have dug one up off eBay, and this is what I am now using to take electronic notes. I don't care that it takes me 45 minutes to write a note in graffiti. I don't care. The fact is that it has no Wi-Fi. And if you can figure out a way to use the IRDA port to hack me, that then more power to you. I would love to have you on the podcast so that we can talk about it. Anyway.
I'm sure Elvis has a plan.
Cyber Elvis has left the building, I was told. And this is just what I was told. Can you talk to us about some 3D printers, Coop? Could you please?
Why, yes. Yes, I can. But the question is, do you want me to?
I would love it if you would.
Are we sure about that?
Well, see, now there's the spirit of Esh right there.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Come on now. So
I don't know if I really want him to after what he posted in Slack.
Well, no, that's just an application video. I mean, come on now. So that's not...
Implantation video. And stills. And it's stills. It's meant to be showing what I brought home from DEF CON.
So this is your what Howard? I did during
no,
summer
this is,
camp?
This is not actually me, but this is what I actually have in my middle finger. So actually making a joke of, do you want to scan my middle finger, is not quite a joke. It's actually a thing.
I'm very curious to know if that thing in your middle finger would set off A, metal detectors, and B, if you have an MRI done, do you have to let them know ahead of time?
Probably the other things in the webs of both of my hands I would want to know about MRI, but I can definitely tell you even airport scanners don't see them.
Ooh.
Wow.
You know, like the whole, you know, skilled cage, walk through, beep, 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 oh, I forgot my keys and right. My coins and my belt buckle. No, there's nothing that goes off under that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right. I get to go to the tax office to, you know, renew that whole sticker in the corner, you know, pay for your state.
Sure.
Yeah, I get to go through one of those to do that, and no beep, 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 beep when, you know, my hands went through, and they kind of looked at me funny as I put my hand straight through and went through a couple times, like, is there any reason for that? And I was like, no, not at all. Kept walking through.
Oh, Coop.
No, not at all. No, no, uh-huh. No problem here.
Yeah, no, nothing to see here. Move along.
Look away. Look away. Nothing to see here.
I was going
to
say,
talking about the in habit, or should is did you have something else?
No, go.
What were you saying?
I was going to be a wise guy. I was just going to say. So, do you come up as a price check when you walk through the line, the self check lines at the grocery now?
No, I need a barcode for that.
Please don't. Yeah.
I might get a barcode as a tattoo one of these days.
Just as a temp tattoo? Just as a temp tattoo. I would love it if you would just, for some reason, have broccoli tattooed on the back of your hand. So that you could walk by, beep, but no, that would actually charge you for it, and you would have no broccoli, and that would suck.
You know, speaking of barcode tattoos, I totally met a guy with at DEF CON with a barcode tattooed on the back of his neck. The great thing about it was the same night I got my implant done, he was going to get one of those same things done underneath his tattoo. So he was good, but unfortunately, the guy doing the implantation, decided to reschedule it till the next morning.
Ah.
Give him a little break, but you know I understand that. After you know we're not going to talk about the fun and enjoyment of mine, because it was normally it should be about 8 minutes. Mine was about 45 minutes.
Oh.
Why?
And also learned that, one, don't do it in front of a live viewing audience.
No.
And two,
people can't get
I myself need more pain meds. Because, unfortunately, I forgot from previous surgeries and injuries in the past that I have a tolerance to pain meds. So, quickly... You know, probably after the first 5 minutes, I felt every single thing that he did.
Oh.
Well, that's unpleasant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but, you know, it was great.
Then it went wrong.
No, we actually finished it. And it's in. It's good.
But 45 minutes?
Yeah. I felt most of it.
Is this called, the part?
I didn't punch the guy. I didn't scream and cuss at him. Instead, I just, you know, gritted my teeth and, cried like a little girl, but you know, without the noise. Tried to actually keep from crying. Yeah. Pain is not your friend.
Pain is not your friend.
But indeed, learned a lot about that, you know, that night that one, if you are experiencing pain, always ask for more drugs. You know, please give me another shot, please. Thank you.
Is this part of the
program? I didn't think about it, other than saying, yes, it hurts, yes, I feel it, and got puzzled looks of, it should be numb. Yeah, no. Next time, we have a deal that in the future, if one, he'll give me more because of my tolerance, and two, if I continue to feel it, I'll say stop, please, and give me more.
That seems fair. That seems fair.
Yeah.
But in other news, there's a inhabitat.com. They did a nice article about the world's largest Delta 3D printer creates a nearly zero cost home out of mud. And, you know, that as a 3D printer new person to it, it makes me really like the idea of being able to print large structures and at almost zero cost because, you know, regular 3D printers, you know, even the tiny ones are still a decent price point.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes me wonder, what's the total cost of this sucker? Now, like the article mentions, it stands 12 meters tall, which, you know, in the States we go by feet, so it's 40 feet high. And the first house that it printed was at the cost of 48 euros. And let's go ahead and find out really quick.
But see, as you're looking for that, I just want to mention there are a lot of good pictures on inhabitat.com about this story. But what's getting me is that it looks like it is so, it's not easy to set up the structure needed to do the printing itself. So a Delta printer, if you're not familiar with it, is a device that instead of printing laterally where there are rails that go horizontally and vertically, here you have a series of pulleys, that basically move it across in a flat plane, but it's hooked up almost like a pyramid in design. You actually have a set of armatures that go up and down on three separate points across. In this case, they have a hexagonal gantry or tower system that the rails run up and down, and that is how it moves because as one side contracts between all three sets of rails, you can pull it across and make the shapes you need to make so that it can move in a level fashion. So Delta 3D printers like the Rostock Max V2 are a great way to get a look at this. So if you go onto YouTube and look up the Rostock Max V2 or Rostock Max devices, you will see a 3D printer that is based on this same method, and you can watch it print. So that might give you a better visualization, since it looks like here this is all photographs. But again, I have to ask, Coop, A, were you able to find the information you were looking for? And B, did they describe how long it takes to set up and tear down the machine itself?
That I'd have to look at as far as a setup and dismantle. But the funny part is, euros definitely are not nearly as expensive as they once were. Thank you, Great Britain, for doing something for the rest of the world. You know, it's only a little over $50 U.S. compared to $48 euro. Oh, darn. You know, Britain's actually did something right for a change.
Oh!
Well, hey now. So, hey, it looks actually like there are a couple of YouTube video clips linked in the article itself, by the way. So, you don't have to go looking for those other printers I was talking about.
Just scrolling down.
If you keep scrolling further down, it does actually show video clips of... Oh, I mean, now, these are not exactly... When you think of a house, you think of a rectangular structure, not basically a mud-built cone, right? I mean, because that's what this essentially looks like.
Uh-huh. Looks more like a silo out of, like, a tribal Africa or something.
Oh, maybe. Or like a big beehive. Well, not beehive. What is it? It just looks like a giant...
Yurt?
Like a giant yurt.
Yeah.
That's a fair assessment. But the fact
but
that...
But for $50-something dollars, yeah. Are you really going to complain that much?
No, I don't think
Especially
I would.
Especially if it's livable. Hell yeah. That's awesome for $50.
Right. It just takes $400,000 to set up, tear down, move it, get the crew in, get the mud processed. And...
That's just the details. Shush. Right.
Okay, sorry. Well, I think it's
a beautiful...
No, we
don't care about details on this podcast.
That's right. We don't. No, seriously, I think that this is actually a very cool way to get inexpensive housing built. Because, you know what, as I got closer and closer to publicly demonstrating interest, as in, like, to my family and friends, people would send me these kinds of articles all the time saying, oh, cool, look what that 3D printing is doing. Not just all of my very conservative work friends coming up to me and saying, hey, are you going to print a gun? And that was the first thing everyone asked, and I said, and I found at other makerspaces, I found people who would have a sign that would hang next to the printer that says, no, I will not print you a gun. I thought it was very funny and irritating at the same time. Because to limit our scope of thought to only weaponizing a technology, sadly, I think you can more easily weaponize a tater tot than you can weaponize a 3D printing device. But that's just my opinion. Anyway, so.
Well, do you think that's just because it's easier to stab someone in the eye with the tater tot than it is a 3D printer?
That's possible. That's entirely possible. Because as far as I can tell, it's very difficult. See, you'll only burn your hand a little bit, but, you know.
So this and many other questions are available for answered on Trump3dprints.com.
What? No. What are you doing? What is that from? I don't want 3D... I don't know.
It's to help build a wall to make America great again.
Oh.
See, we're going to take this. And you know, that's like what? What did he say?
Do they advertise with TrumpSingles.com?
You realize you've given them more free advertising than they've probably spent on their own marketing campaign.
But just think
but
about
nobody it. Still goes there.
Yeah. This 3D printer, you know, for like prints for $50, a 40-foot house. Think about how many walls we could make then on the cheap.
Oh, come on. You know, I'd rather you spend time, Coop, I'd rather you spend time talking to us about Pokemon Go than listening to that. Because, I'm not worried about someone's single-mingle 3D printing shingles. I don't know what it is.
So, but, could you actually use that same mud 3D printer to print the naked Trump statues that we've found across the nation at different cities?
Why were you looking? Wait, why were you looking? What are you... See, this is why sometimes it is better to remain just a little bit focused elsewhere, I think, because...
It's only tiny, tiny problems, that's all.
Oh.
And in other news, speaking of small problems that really don't amount to much, looks like the Hacker News, yet again, one of our favorite news sources, has brought to our attention that Iran bans Pokemon Go. Yes, even a broken watch is right twice a day. Iran has done something right for a change.
What? No.
Pokemon Go has become the world's most popular mobile game since its launch in July. Not everyone loves it. Big surprise. So, Pokemon Go is officially banned in Iran. The Iranian High Council of Virtual Spaces. There's a High Council of Virtual Spaces.
That's kind of amazing in and of itself.
The country's official body that oversees online activity has prohibited the use of Pokemon Go app within its country due to unspecified security concerns. Are they afraid ISIS is going to use it to find where their kids are going? You know, aren't we all afraid of ISIS finding our kids through Pokemon Go? Yes, I'm going back to that article a few weeks ago.
Yep.
That made absolutely no sense at all. And so, along with this one, the best part about it was, one, Iran did something right for a change, and two, I can't believe they actually have a High Council of Virtual Spaces.
Coop,
is
I got
that
two things
their
from
version
you.
Of Elders of the Internet?
So, Coop, one, you're obviously Team Instinct for thinking this is a right move.
Uh-oh.
Because, you know, you're just wrong on that regard. And two, so apparently I can trust the van outside my apartment complex that says, you know, free Pokemon inside because it obviously is an ISIS.
Oh, no. Do not get in that van. Do not get in that van.
We're totally going with this on the fact that the Elders of the Internet and the High Council of Virtual Spaces both believe Pokemon Go is the devil. And yes, ISIS is totally giving away free Pokemon in every van that also has free candy.
So, despite this, these restrictions in Iran, according to the article, fans of the game have still managed to play and get their time in using VPNs. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the reason that people learn to do things is when you try to take things away. Would people truly have cared about fill-in-the-blank thing if it had been free all along? I wonder. You know, does the forbidden fruit factor go in, add into everything? And apparently for learning how to properly, so maybe they should be thankful that the Council of Virtual Spaces, where was it? The High Council of Virtual Spaces, which sounds like something out of a sci-fi novel, at first glance, maybe. But anyway, I don't know. The point is that despite these restrictions, you have taught people how to go and figure out VPN connectivity. So at least you know that you will have more people in your job pool potentially who are aware of these things. Who knows?
So now you're saying that, kids, you've heard it here now, defy the elders of the internet and the High Council of Virtual Spaces and choose a great VPN solution.
You mean like
one
Axiom
of our sponsors,
VPN?
Axiom VPN. You've heard it here. Get Axiom VPN. Defy the High Council of Virtual Spaces and the elders of the internet. Go with Axiom, the best VPN to save your Pokemon Go addiction.
I kind of feel like we're talking about some weird D&D campaign.
It's a little bit. At the same time, I do wonder if our sponsor is now going to be calling us saying, please stop dragging me into international situations.
Be like, we loved you, but not anymore.
I do find myself a little curious. However, if we look back at the rundown, we actually have kind of wandered into the area of security. So I feel good to mention that, because VPNs and security go hand in hand, right? So the Hacker News also, we have another story here that talks about the end of SMS-based two-factor authentication. Yes, it's insecure. Apparently it was embarrassed and had to go and hide for another 6 weeks, which means a longer summer. No. Instead, it turns out that SMS-based two-factor authentication, or 2FA for short, has been declared insecure and soon might be a thing of the past. So if you haven't heard, if you haven't looked into increasing the security posture of your personal footprint, see, too much jargon, people. Bottom line, when you go to log in to your email service or your Google or your Microsoft or your Apple account, there's usually, in addition to a password and your username or account name, you're usually allowed to set up, hey, we'll text you an additional random code that you can type in. And you get that that's supposed to prove that the person holding the device is the same person. It's supposed to help prove that you are who you say you are, that the person who is attempting to access this account is indeed the same self-same person. However, it turns out that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, has released a new draft of their digital authentication guideline document. Which, by the way, the structure, it's kind of like shin bone connected to the thigh bone kind of stuff. Basically, the way it goes is that people on the internet, very smart people, generate these request for comments or RFC documents, which are then resourced by people who are in standards-based organizations who read that stuff and say, we're going to take the work of these folks and we're going to take that idea and turn it into a standard, which other organizations like companies, corporations, government bodies, and a host of other humans go out there and they'll take that and turn this around and turn that into an implementation standard, which then becomes the de facto structure of things like how the internet is structured or how X500 messaging is structured or how directory services are structured, and on and on and on. So if we look at this, there is a standards organization that is saying, you know what, maybe sending a randomized code to a mobile device isn't good enough, and we need to find something else. Maybe we need to consider some other method or means. But it says in the article, if out-of-band verification is to be made using an SMS message on a public mobile telephone network, the verifier shall verify that the pre-registered telephone number being used is actually associated with a mobile network and not with a VoIP provider. Because what the risk becomes is someone else can easily lie about being a mobile provider or can intercept those messages because the messages themselves are not protected. So, if you could just encrypt your... What's going on in the chat room? Wait, no. That's not good. I am not saying that out loud, although I almost did. No.
Better than two-factor, right?
Yeah, as long as it's two-factor, as long as my tinfoil shorts can talk to my tinfoil helmet, I'll be fine.
Tinfoil cup?
I'm not, hey.
Just fill it with the lime and have a certain temperature?
I use my Nest thermostat in that specific area, okay? And you don't want to know where the thermostat is kept, okay? I'm not telling you where the thermostat is kept. That's not appropriate.
I have a virtual private tunnel for that.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Sauces. I don't know that we should keep going. Actually, we're almost there. We are so close to being there. And that leads us down the rabbit hole, or your hole. Oh. Never mind. Go ahead, Pinky.
Wow.
Just continue on a serious note. To go back to your article briefly, just, you know, we can agree that, you know, two-factor authentication via the phone might not be the most secure thing, but I don't necessarily know if we should take this as a call of abandon it completely, because security through something that can't possibly be hijacked is still better than not securing yourself at all. Obviously, you should maybe try to move on to something using, like, Duo or an app-based, or do Vesh's move since he's not here to say smart card. You know, do something like that. You should obviously start trying to migrate to that, but still take some protection
rather
than no protection.
Well, okay, and so since you thankfully brought us back down to the ground, the challenge is a mobile device sometimes is not always easy to connect a smart card reader or other device to. It makes it more difficult to take and find an out-of-band verification, as they say. So out of band. Okay. So in band. Okay. So if it's on the screen with you, that would be, let's say, in band or in channel. If you have a standalone device like a Google Authenticator application that's running on a mobile phone, or if you have, if you use a desktop-based code generation system to get these messages, that would be out of band, right? If someone faxed it to you, that would be out of band, because you have to go over to the fax machine and go back to the 80s and 90s to go get the fax. But if you went back over there and picked it up off the machine, you could go look. The same would hold true if someone emailed that code to you. There is a concern there about, okay, so how do I know that the appropriate party is receiving it? Oh, I know. I'll use a smart card-based solution. That means that I have to have the card in the reader connected to a machine that can talk to that can then use this technology to help secure the communication. A mobile phone doesn't have a smart card reader.
Yeah, why not take a different stance and go with, you know, similar out-of-band with other devices like a YubiKey by Yubico or a Yuki by Dangerous Things, which is an encrypted, it's basically like a YubiKey that's implanted into your body. There's no way you can forget that. There's no way that it's really hard for you to be able to sniff that as well.
Sure.
Because it's very well insulated by your own body.
So the concern is, okay, so I'm going to go with the idea that the YubiKey is an RFID tag that's embedded under the skin.
Uh-huh.
So let's say my phone I dropped it last week, and the reader for that is not working today. Or I forgot, heaven forbid, the battery ran out in my phone. Now I have no way of actually logging in. So there have to be workarounds in these things. Well, all I'm getting at is that there has to be a balance of convenience and security, which do not go hand in hand. Which was the argument or conversation from the very beginning of this podcast tonight. Uh-huh. About the challenges of GPG and encryption that's available for free and is very strong. But how many people are willing to implement it and work through the trials and tribulations of getting it up and running in a sustainable way? Because if I have to carry around a YubiKey, which I do actually, I carry three of them, and they're all for different reasons. But that's just me. Not everyone has gone to that length or has had the exposure to it. So they say, well, how do I make use of that thing? How do I use a YubiKey in conjunction with my mobile phone? And not everybody has the same model or way to implement it. So I completely agree with you, Coop. There are other out-of-band verifiers that you can use. There are ways of doing this. I love the idea of actually have, even if I took that YubiKey and I actually just, why not just take my cell phone case and stick it on the inside of the cell phone case? Only someone who knew it was there would be able to use it, and they'd have to know what it went to. Right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, so that wouldn't be terrible either, would it?
Also might be fun to, from the other side standpoint of the attacker, if you know that implants are widespread, while you're asking people, you know, hey, can you tell me where these directions are, what have you? You know, like you got Google Maps on your phone, and you're getting someone to explain the directions to you of where you're trying to go with the maps on your phone, that you have a case that's sniffing out any and all implants that they have there. and try and record what information they have on them.
If you were at the pool party for B-Sides LV this year, you would have seen something that was actually termed the booby trap. The booby trap was a cell phone mounted to a corset.
What?
And it actually had, it was basically like a tiny little wall of sheep roaming around as a mobile device at the pool party. And it was actually by a High Collar Software, I believe is the name of the company that developed the software for it. It's a mobile version of skimming, for local signals for both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and cellular and trying to find open things that it could, put you on a tiny mobile wall of sheep, which was very interesting. And since it was at, lower than eye level, shall we say, it was actually called the booby trap.
That's amazing. Kudos to that naming.
Yeah.
Is that a top shelf attack? Top shelf. What?
I'm not going to comment one way or the other because, I just think it was awesome. And the person doing it had no problem with doing that. She chose to participate in this way. And at first I was looking and having a conversation with her. And then I suddenly noticed that, I saw blinky lights, which distracted me. And then I asked and I was told, shh. So I figure it was there on purpose. That's what it was there to do. It was hilarious. And I actually got the card from the developers saying that's pretty awesome because they have the hardware and the software. It's good stuff. So anyway, so let's go back and talk for a moment about the free app stalking, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so let's continue to encourage this reputation that I'm a stalker that Cybernigma will probably willingly tell you.
Wait,
you know,
what did you do now?
Speaking I followed him on traps. Twitter and started stalking, or, you know, liking random tweets, and then since then he's called me a stalker every once in a while. So, you know, this article is dedicated to Cybernigma, just in case he's listening.
Aw, this one goes out to... Is this like Delilah now?
Yeah, I guess so. So basically, Bloomberg is...
If you have an article... dedication you'd like to make, there. Be sure to reach out to SATX Hackers.
Oh, there's
with hashtag dedication.
Oh, this might be
or
the
hashtag club salt.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Anyway, this is just going to get worse.
Yes, it is.
So Bloomberg's talking about a free app to help you do your stalking now. Keep in mind this is targeted toward private investigators. I would argue it wouldn't be that hard to, you know, extend to social engineering and or actual stalking. And basically, it's a company called IDI. They're about a year old now. And they're in the data fusion business. You might wonder, what is data fusion? Basically, they're taking the public and non-public databases that private investigators already use, things like your DMV records, photographs of your cars, whatever, along with what marketers know, such as what politicians you donate to, where you spend money, you know, which H-E-B store you visit, which Chinese place do you go to every Tuesday. And they combine this information.
Hey, it's Hot and Sour Soup Tuesday. Don't knock Hot and Sour Soup Tuesday. Sorry, go ahead.
You're disrespecting Taco Tuesday now.
No. It's Taco Wednesday. It depends on where you eat, sir. Never mind.
It's Taco Thursday, guys. It's Taco Thursday.
I still like the reference. Go ahead. Sorry.
The personal profiles include all of your known addresses, phone numbers, and email addresses, along with every piece of property ever bought or sold, plus related mortgages, past and present vehicles owned, criminal citations from, you know, speeding tickets on up, your voter registration, hunting permits, and names and phone numbers of your neighbors. The reports also include photos of cars taken by private companies using automated license plate readers. It has billions of snapshots tagged with GPS coordinates and timestamps to help private investigators, you know, surveil people or bust alibis.
Just called Facebook?
Pretty much, yeah. But also, to add on to any paranoia you may have at this moment, IDI also runs two coupon websites, AllAmericanSavings.com and SamplesAndSavings.com, that collects purchasing and behavioral data. So this guy in Bloomberg, you know, signs up, and as for their email address, birthday, home address, that could easily link you to, you know, your profile on that website. Then they also asked if you suffered from arthritis, asthma, diabetes, or depression. and other information to help tailor its discounts toward you.
That's amazing.
And that's, it really is.
And that's,
all this for coupons.
For
yeah.
Coupons.
So then private investigators can stalk you better. So that van outside your window, guys, probably, you know, uses this website.
So I have to be curious now.
So it's sponsored by the NSA?
No. Why?
Unfortunately.
That'll be contract work. So look, the curiosity then, number one, do you look through your own, yes, this is random, but still applicable. Do you go and check the blinds / curtain / front door before opening it? Or do you just open the door literally on purpose, just wearing nothing but saran wrap, saying, how do you do? I mean, seriously, there's, yes, what I know. I took a left turn with that to see if you were awake. Thank you for still wow. being here. Yes. But no, seriously, because in terms of personal privacy,
don't be Mormon elders coming to his house.
Well, you know, if you're looking to, nope, not going to say it. So the
bad habit.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I know the dress code of, you know, B-Sides volunteers next year.
It's not saran wrap. Probably brighter colored shirts. So I don't think you can
find brighter colored shirts.
Challenge accepted. So
God, help us.
Hey, thank you. There is a point of curiosity really about, doesn't this make us question what we actually give up for free? Doesn't this make us think about the things that people ask of us? Because I can save a dollar. So in a way, the dollar savings on that box of dish soap I just got from the coupon site, in a way, was paying me off for the piece of information, right? So you could say that a coupon doesn't have any legitimate value in, as the form of paper currency, but apparently you can trade that information for that dollar savings. It's almost like someone mailed you a dollar over the internet.
All for, you know, your PII. Just whether or not you know it.
That's right. Your personally identifiable information. You say you're safeguarding it, but at the same time, you give it away for free. Well, not free. Apparently, the 35 cents off on that veggie light dinner is enough to get you to cough it up. You'll you'll be able to answer a question. So someone came up to me at my place of business recently, walked up and said, hi, they're wearing a shirt that has a logo on it, but I don't know the logo. And they started asking me questions about how long I've been at the location. And I, since I didn't recognize them, and I don't care that you have a clipboard, that is not license for you to just start asking personal questions or details. So I don't understand it. But if I can tell you what city or what famous character I'm most like from this week's popular TV series, I guess that's where I'm going to just give up for free, and so I can share with my friends and tell them I'm a very popular character on the show, that I answered all the questions 14 times until I got the answer I wanted. And then I shared it with you because I want you to validate the fact that I am, the most popular character on the show. But I gave away my information for free multiple times to get to that result. I just find that a unique trait amongst humans where we argue for one. Well, okay, so I guess us all being hypocritical in one way or another, we all talk about a good game about what we'd like to do, but maybe we don't always practice it, is the point. I don't know, maybe you guys are really good at sticking to your guns, and you get up and you mow the lawn on the day you say you're going to do it, and remember to take out the trash too. Who knows? So, Coop, do you by any chance take out the trash when you're supposed to?
Sometimes, but I also forget to put this toilet seat down every once in a while.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. How are you still alive?
Well, I also put the lid down.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
Oh,
good.
Okay. Whew.
Man, because otherwise, badness. Much badness.
Then it'd be like,
it's one of those fun things that, you know, you do it to yourself and you almost fall in.
Oh, man.
That's some PII just for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And before we start sharing anything else for free around this place, I'd like to thank you very much for listening to us.
Viking you are.
Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings and not always quite as informative Well, actually, thank you for listening to this TMI podcast, where we share more than you ever really wanted to know about us, and hopefully you got something of value out of it, too. Please feel free to reach out to us with questions, comments, concerns, or maybe your favorite chicken recipe. I don't know. You're welcome to find us at SATX Hackers, and maybe next week we might actually stick to the topics at hand. Until then, thanks so much, and have a good night.